Streaming 24/7.
Oh my God, it's better than I thought.
This is Radio Influence.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. We are your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information, and you can reach us on the worldwide internet at crushperformance.com. You can get our blogs, our podcasts. You can also send any questions, comments, or smart remarks our way there in our contact page. And if you'd like, follow us on Twitter, at Jeff Crush. I'm not much of a social media expert, but I'm starting to get into it. So at Jeff Crush is our Twitter handle. And if you're on Facebook, we've started this cool thing called the Talent Grid. It's a closed group, but if you want to get in there, do so on Facebook. We'll let you in. Just apply. We've got a great collection of athletes, coaches, sports scientists from all around the world. There's not a lot of people. I think there's about 400 people in there right now. But there's some really cool things going on, some great conversations. So we're trying to hook you guys up with the world of sport performance. We have athletes asking questions in there. We have scientists posting information. It's actually fantastic, so I'm enjoying it. It's called the Talent Grid. So if you want to get on there, do so, apply, and we will let you in. Today on the show, we are talking the road to Rio. We'll be talking Olympics all day. We got some great guests coming up. But before that, I just want to go back to last week when we looked at the Major League Baseball Midsummer Classic. We had a couple of great guests join us last week from the AL East. Tim Leeper, the first base coach for the Toronto Blue Jays, joined us to talk about that team and some interesting insights into baseball in general. And on the West Coast, we were joined by the third base coach for the Los Angeles Dodgers, Chris Woodward, Crush favorite, a former athlete, worked with Chris for many, many years. He's also very insightful when it comes to performance in sport, coming across as a player, now into the coaching ranks, and I'm sure he is somebody you want to watch move up the ladder, maybe take on a managerial role. I'm kind of predicting one day a GM role for Chris Woodward, but some great baseball talk last week. And the question of the day last week was, do you think the Major League Baseball schedule is the toughest in all of sport? I think it is. I thought it was by and far. We did a Twitter poll last week, and the results were, at the end of the day, 55% of you said, yes, you could consider the Major League Baseball schedule as the toughest in all of sport, 162 games in 180 days. 45% said no. I thought that number would be way lower. I thought way more people would agree that it's the hardest one in sport. There was a strong, strong argument, and actually the only argument was for the NHL schedule. I guess, you know, if you think about it, because of the pace of the game and the physical demands of the game, you could almost see the argument there. But listen to me, 162 games in 180 days. It's not humanly possible. We know the NHL schedule is tough, but on the text board last week, I think for the first time, my opinion on the toughest schedule in all of sport wavered. Jared sent in a text saying that, Jeff, the toughest schedule in all of sport is the Western Hockey League schedule. And all he said after that was bus trips from Brandon to Portland plus school. And you know what? It got me thinking. That might be the toughest schedule in all of sport. Not because of the number of games, but because of what the athletes have to deal with around those games. And Jared, you're absolutely right. Thanks for that text, by the way. It was fantastic because it really opened my eyes to another level. Now, I've worked with plenty of athletes, plenty of hockey players in the NHL, and plenty of guys in the WHL and the junior ranks. And, you know, one of the things we try to do for these athletes as they manage their careers and we try to manage their performance is we look at the environments they're in. But you know what? For some reason, Jared, your text last week really got me thinking about the approach to junior hockey. The professional athletes, listen, you guys, we traveled in a first-class charter plane, five-star hotel rooms, rooms to yourself, excellent food, meal money you wouldn't believe. We never had to touch our suitcases going to hotels. You get to the hotel, it's in your room. And it's a pretty good lifestyle. And again, you know, because of the travel, and I'm not underestimating the value there. I mean, you kind of need that stuff in order to have your athletes perform at the highest level possible. You know, these are the world's best athletes. But think about the minor league athletes. Now, listen, I started with the Blue Jays in the minor leagues. We built that program from scratch. It was fantastic. But I remember in the clubhouses, the food, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and Dorito potato chips and, you know, maybe a small bowl of, you know, bruised up fruit somewhere here or there. It's changed dramatically nowadays. But the minor leagues and developmental sports, let's not take that out of the equation, you know. And kind of when I asked the question, I was looking at the major pro sports, you know, the NBA, we could look at the NHL. The NFL is not even in the conversation. One game a week, don't get me wrong. Listen to me. I don't want to open up a ball of wax here, but the NFL schedule, you know, they're talking about adding games, and I'm with the players in this one. No more games. You got to be kidding me, especially in the preseason when they don't mean anything. You know, one game a week is more than enough in football, no question, if you manage it properly. But 162 games in 180 days. You can look at the NBA as well. You can look at pro soccer, and that's an interesting one because those players are all over the place, playing in different leagues, playing all over the place. So you'd have to really think about that one. But for me, hands down, just being around sport at the highest level, professional sport, I was thinking the pro leagues. Boy, Jared, you opened up my eyes because just below those leagues is maybe the toughest competitive schedules in all of sport. Open for conversation. Let me know what you guys think. Jared, thanks for that. Tim Leeper had an interesting comment when we asked him the question of the day. Tim Leeper, of course, the first base coach for the Toronto Blue Jays. He wasn't really caught up in how hard or how difficult the schedule is. And maybe this is why the Blue Jays are rolling and so good right now. If this is the mindset of the team and this is how they're embracing the schedule in the game, this might be why this team's really coming together nicely. But he said, you know, there's no question it's a grind. We all know it. It's tough. You're away, you're traveling, you're rarely at home. But he said they look at it as a challenge. How can we be better in this schedule? That's their approach. They're not looking, yeah, they know it's hard. They're more focused on how do we get better in this demanding schedule. And I freaking loved every minute of the conversations last week. You can check out the podcast on our website, crushperformance.com, and also at Radio Influence. But great conversations last week, and I really appreciate it. But I wanted to go back because this week we're talking the road to Rio. And these games are plagued with distractions like I've never seen before. You know, this isn't the typical, okay, listen, we have security issues. That's every single game, especially in today's, you know, global environment, political environment, and with terrorism and everything that's going on, a very, very serious issue, and you can never undermine that for sure. So that's always a concern and always in the conversation when you have a major sporting event. So that's par for course, and you know what? The IOC and the organizers of events like this do an incredible job of assuring athlete and fan safety. So that's fantastic. But we're talking human health issues. The Zika virus is a real thing. I can't remember, at least in my lifetime, a games that was faced with a human health issue like the Zika virus. I mean, if we're looking at, you know, sort of the epicenter of this situation, we're looking at Central America as sort of the epicenter. And in May, 150 of the world's top health officials sent a letter, more of a warning letter than anything else, to the International Olympic Committee and the World Health Organization, pleading with them to either cancel the games, postpone the games, or move them. At least, you know, give them some time until they get a handle on the Zika virus, how to handle it, and, you know, which way is it going, and which way is the wind blowing, so to speak, in terms of the spread of the virus and how to handle it. They're just wanting time. The organizers, the IOC and the World Health Organization and the organizers in Brazil felt that the situation was under control and the risk to athletes was minimal. Well, since then, of course, we've seen some major athletes, some very popular faces pull out of the games. And I was fully expecting a landslide, you know, with some of the other sports. In golf in particular, we've seen some of the top athletes withdraw from the games. I was just praying and pleading that we wouldn't see the same in tennis or in some of the other sports. Usain Bolt will be there up to now at this point anyway. and some of the world's top athletes will be there. But it's a real thing. I refuse to judge an athlete for not going to the games and representing their country because of the Zika virus, because this is real. It's absolutely real. So the question of the day, and we've had this question sort of floating out there for the last few weeks, is the question of to compete or not to compete. There's real issues around there. We have the Zika virus, of course. Of course, now they're talking about the pollution in the water and this super bacteria that they're finding in the bay just outside of Rio, where some of the water sports will be held in competing. And then, of course, a week ago or so, the Brazilian and Rio police department come out and say, in a very public way, in the news, national news, we cannot protect you. We are underpaid and understaffed for a event of this magnitude, which raises further concerns. Well, today we're going to have some interesting conversations. We will be talking with Anne Merklinger, who is the CEO for Canada's Own the Podium program. This program has pumped money into the development of their athletes and the support of their top athletes. And it's interesting to see how this organization has maybe changed the sporting landscape in an entire country. Canada, with its small population of around 37 million right now, produces more professional hockey players than any other nation on earth. It's number two in producing Major League Baseball players, and it's number two in producing players for the National Basketball Association per capita. In terms of the world sports and international sports, it's an absolute powerhouse. They've invested a ton of money into their sports science, but also the programs to implement and get the sports science out to the people. They have this program called the Long-Term Athlete Development Program, which I personally feel is one of the most incredible additions to the sporting landscape in recent history. It basically maps out the life of an athlete from its start, from the athlete's start to the finish, whether they go on and just play for recreation for the rest of their lives or whether it turns out to be the athlete takes the road of high-performance sports. And one of the beauties of this model is it sort of gives you a guideline at each level of development, what should be happening with that athlete and what you should be focusing on with it within the various sports. Just absolutely fantastic. Running parallel to that is an incredible coaching program. We're going to talk to Anne about the approach Canada has to their national sporting programs. It's absolutely fantastic. And we're going to talk to one of the Canadian athletes. Listen, Rio is special for a number of reasons, okay? And they're going to be introducing the first Paralympic triathlon. Back in 2000, a Canadian won the first Olympic triathlon. Simon Whitfield, you might know his name, a sporting great. And in Canada, a superstar, and especially in the sport of triathlon. And now we see Stefan Daniel, who will be joining us later, heading to Rio as a young hopeful for the gold in the Paralympics triathlon. So there's a bunch of cool storylines behind the scenes. We're going to be tracking them for the next few weeks as we head into the Olympics. We're going to be talking to WADA about the doping landscape and where we're at right now. We're certainly going to be looking at the technology and how technology is influencing performance at the Olympic levels. In London, for example, Nike introduced a new shoe to the U.S. Marathon team, and it was a few ounces lighter than the previous one. When they did the breakdown of the benefits of this new lighter shoe over, you know, the 40,000 foot strikes of an average marathon, it came out to be the weight of a small car. Savings, energy savings that equaled the weight of a small car. These are the little things that can influence human performance for sure. We're going to look at the technology going into Rio, most certain. And of course, some of the great backstories. Today, we kick off the Crush Road to Rio as we look at the great Canadian program and how it's influencing sport. Right after this on Crush Performance, stick around.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We've got something for everybody. National sports radio talents such as the fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show. And the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. New shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. Entertainment shows like LOL with Nancy Alexander. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger.
We've got you covered.
You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com. You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. Jeff Groeschel here. Please do get to us, crushperformance.com. You can get our blogs, podcasts. You can get all of our hookups. You can also send us any questions, comments, or smart remarks there. We look forward to it for sure. Today, we're talking the road to Rio. Many distractions in the media, as we know, but behind the scenes, sport goes on. One of the more interesting sport organizations on the planet right now is the Canadian Olympic Program. The sports science that has gone into the development of the high caliber world-class Olympic athletes in Canada has trickled right down to the grassroots, and it's shining through in every single sport, whether it's an Olympic sport or not. And a lot of this comes from the initiatives of the Own the Podium program, which has worked with the federal government and private funding to come up with ways to push sport forward in terms of coaching development, certainly athlete development, but also with systems and plans that help long-term development. One of the more interesting programs that has been introduced to the sporting world in recent history has been the Canadian Long-Term Athlete Development Program, where we look at the phases of development and what should be focused on in each level of an athlete's development, regardless of what sport they're in. Canada has done a very special job of not only outlining that system, they've also put together, parallel to that, an incredible coaching development program, which might be one of the more powerful initiatives in all of sport anywhere in the globe. Not many people know this, but per capita, Canada is number two in the world for producing Major League Baseball players, and they're also number two for producing players in the National Basketball League. And a lot of this mentality and training and athlete development comes from the Olympic development system and the sports system inside the country. This system of the long-term athlete development program is now being implemented, copied, and used by countries all over the world, which is great for sport, no question about it. But if you look inside of Canada's sports science program, there are few countries, if any, that can even come close. So we look forward to Rio, and we look forward to what these athletes are able to do and the results of this incredible program. We're joined now by the CEO of Own the Podium program, Anne Merklinger. Anne, thanks for joining us today.
Great to speak with you, Jeff.
Well, listen, we're heading into a very exciting games in Rio, and the games, in the media at least, have been plagued with issues and distractions, it seems. At this point in time, we know that not one Canadian athlete has withdrawn from the games. We've seen some of the big names in golf and on the U.S. side. So I have to say that, you know, we see what we do through the media, but you guys have done your background work in making sure athletes are safe. So I just wanted to get your perspective right off the bat about your thoughts going into Rio here.
Well, certainly it's a testament to the great work of the Canadian Olympic Committee and the Canadian Paralympic Committee in terms of preparing the Canadian teams as they head into Rio. There's been countless visits to Rio, both with Canada's top athletes and coaches, but more importantly with the organizations that are responsible for organizing the Canadian team mission. So the COC staff have been there on numerous occasions. They have done everything possible to ensure the safety and health of Canada's athletes and the entire Canadian Olympic and Paralympic team. So we know that from an organizing committee perspective, the games will be delivered on time, and every precaution is being implemented to make sure that it's a terrific experience for the athletes, and that's really what the Olympics are all about.
Absolutely. We're talking with Anne Merklinger, CEO of the Own the Podium program in Canada. Well, there's been 44 test events. Over 17,000 athletes, coaches, and event officials, as you mentioned, have competed and checked out the facilities down there. So we're set for sport right now. Let's go back to London, Anne. And just sort of recap, you know, what we learned from London in terms of the high-performance programs for both the able-bodied and Paralympic platforms, and maybe some of the thoughts that were implemented early in this quadrennial as we got ready for Rio.
Yeah, great question. There were three primary gaps that we identified after London that apply to both the Olympics and the Paralympics. The first one was that we needed to have a greater focus on the health and injury prevention, injury management of Canada's athletes. So I'm very pleased to say that heading into Rio, we have a very healthy group of athletes. So they're much healthier in terms of injury prevention, than we were 4 years ago. So that's terrific. Secondly, we knew in both the Olympic and Paralympic environments that the depth of our podium potential pool was getting flatter. In fact, it was even decreasing a little bit. So since London, we made a significant shift in our investment strategy, and we're now investing not just in athletes with podium potential for the upcoming set of games, but also for the subsequent games. So relevant to Rio, we've been investing not just for 2020, but also into 2024. We might not see the impact of that until 2020, but early indications are already very positive as we have an increased number of top five performances in world championships and top eight performances. So that has been a really important shift for our organization. And finally, the third gap for us was to work very closely in trying to develop and recruit some of the best technical leaders and coaches that can work with our top athletes. And certainly the performances of two sports in particular, athletics and swimming, are a testament to the quality of the high performance director and the coaches within both of those sports. So I can tell you, Jeff, that Canada's athletes are ready, the coaches are ready, the support staff are ready, the entire Canadian Olympic and Paralympic teams are ready to go to Rio and perform to their best.
We're talking with Anne Merklinger, CEO of the Own the Podium program in Canada. And, you know, it's been fantastic for me personally. My profession, of course, high performance sports on the professional side, professional hockey, certainly professional baseball. But to see, you know, a national program come together over a period of decades and even years and progress, and to hear you talk about, you know, learning from London, moving into Rio and then beyond, it's just a fantastic experience to see the process in motion. So incredible. It must be as rewarding for you guys on the inside.
Well, it certainly is, and there's so many terrific stories that Canada will hear and share and be a part of as the games unfold. One particular terrific accomplishment is that we have five team sports qualified for Rio. We had two team sports qualify in the London 2012 games. So to have five team sports going to Rio is absolutely fantastic. And the team sport, it unites the entire Canadian Olympic team. It unites all of Canada. It really has a profound effect on our country. So, you know, watch closely for the performances of those summer team sports. And, you know, I just want to remark on what a terrific progression that's been for our country.
Absolutely. That's incredible. And, you know, Anne, you talk about the investment into the future. I really like this because, you know, if we look at the funding over this quadrennial for, you know, our Canadian athletic programs, there's a substantial amount of money over the quadrennial. I think it's upwards of $140 million that's been invested here. But there's also the project called the Team Sports Strategy, and I do believe that's that long-term vision you were talking about.
Well, that's right, and the Team Sports Strategy has paid dividends, and it's a relatively small amount of money, but a terrific initiative from the Government of Canada. $6 million a year has been invested for the last 6 years. And we've gone from having two team sports qualify to have five qualify. The Government of Canada, you know, really is a lion's share investor in high-performance sport in Canada. $64 million a year for the excellence envelope. We have a 15% increase in the Rio quadrennial compared to what we had going into London. So every possible thing, every possible strategy, initiative that could be taken to help prepare Canada's team has been done. There's been nothing left to chance, no regrets, and let the games begin.
Absolutely. Well, you know, in London, we did very, very well. I do believe in our conversations after London, everybody was incredibly happy with the results. The goals for Rio are 19 or more medals or placing in the top 12, and that's very Canadian-esque, aggressive, and we've backed that up with the process to get our athletes there. I love it.
Yes, for sure, Jeff. The primary objective is to win more medals than we won in London. And as you mentioned, we won 18 in London. So anything north of that, 19 and higher, would be a terrific performance. However, that's a stretch target. It is, you know, the Olympic Games are the ultimate contest. And so we know that to improve on our performance in London will be, you know, a stretch goal for our country, a stretch goal for the team. You know, but at the end of the day, we need to make sure that we've done everything possible to prepare the athletes and the coaches to, you know, to reach their full potential, and we've done that.
We're talking with Anne Merklinger, CEO of the Own the Podium program. Well, internally, Anne, we know there's no rest for you. Canada seems to bounce off of very strongly, by the way, and passionately from the Winter Olympics. And now I think there's been a really heightened awareness and a following for our summer athletes. And I think that's a real exciting time for sport in this country.
Couldn't agree more. And, you know, kudos to both the Canadian Olympic Committee, the Canadian Paralympic Committee, and importantly, the Government of Canada, who are all trying very, very hard to get our athletes, you know, in the media, just as we're talking about today, 365 days a year for every year of the quadrennial, not just around games. And so that's really, you know, we've seen evidence of that and the impact of that. This past year, 2015, was the year of sport in Canada. And, you know, certainly the Government of Canada was instrumental in trying to raise the awareness and profile and importance of sport, and particularly high-performance sport in Canada.
And let's talk about this for a quick second. You know, we look at the impact Vancouver had on this country, and it more maybe more importantly, the effort put in leading up to Vancouver. In terms of sports science, as you mentioned, the coaching personnel and the technical directors, but also the trickle-down effect of all the incredible science that was applied to our Olympic athletes, it's reached down, I believe, to the grassroots level, no question about it. Canada has such a powerful coaching development program, and I think that bodes well for that talent pool that's coming up behind our world-class athletes right now. Don't you agree?
I do, and, you know, the research and innovation investment is often the difference maker, you know, the 1% gain that can really make a difference as to whether an athlete or a team is fourth or fifth versus being on the podium. I think, importantly, we also have a new investment that will begin later this year, again from the Government of Canada, $5 million a year over the next 4 years that's focused on the next generation of podium potential athletes. And I think that's all recognition of how important it is for Canada to do well on the Olympic and Paralympic stage. Every athlete that comes back that's performed well there are role models for young Canadians, role models for communities, and really are in a position to help advocate for a healthier and more physically active lifestyle across our whole country.
Oh, it's like you're reading my mind, and I wanted to ask you about your thoughts on the social impact of Canadian athletes and their success on the world stage. It goes well, well beyond sport.
Well, when we saw what happened in Vancouver, it truly changed our country. We're a much bolder, stronger, prouder, more confident Canada than we were before, and that the culture, you know, has been maintained. Canada's athletes going to Rio, they believe they can win, they want to win, and they will win. And, you know, our job as a technical organization is to provide the podium potential athletes with every opportunity to reach their full potential.
Absolutely love it. Anne Merklinger, CEO of Own the Podium program. And one last thing, you know, we talk about and we see our able-bodied athletes compete on television and they maybe get the lion's share of the credit, but our Paralympic program heading into Rio is absolutely outstanding.
Well, and what better advocate do we have right now than our Minister of Sport and Minister of Persons with Disability, the Honorable Carla Quattro, who was a multiple Paralympic medalist herself. So, you know, she's a terrific champion. She's heavily invested in what we're trying to do as an organization and invested in everything that we're trying to do in high-performance sport in Canada. So our Paralympic team will be extremely strong. Our performance objective for the Paralympics in Rio is to finish at top 16 in total medal nation count. And, you know, we know that both the Canadian Olympic Committee and Canadian Paralympic Committee will share the learnings of the Olympic Games to ensure that we can capitalize on some of those for the Paralympic athletes as they head into Rio.
And absolutely fantastic. Listen, we really appreciate everything you guys do at Own the Podium for sport in general on the greater good, because it trickles down right to our grassroots levels in virtually every sport that we do, especially when we consider the sports science and coaching development. So thanks for your time today. Listen, we'll look forward to watching our team as we head into Rio, and we'll look forward to maybe catching up with you as the games begin or come to an end.
So look forward to doing that as well, Jeff, and thanks for your passion and commitment to what all of Canada's athletes and coaches are trying to achieve.
Great, Anne. Safe travels, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
There you go. A fantastic conversation with Anne Merklinger, CEO of Own the Podium. Canada goes to Rio with very aggressive goals of claiming more medals than they won in London. London was 18. They're shooting for 19 or more. An interesting development on the Canadian front. In London, they only had two teams competing at the Olympics. This year in Rio, it will be five teams. So some strategy in place there. It's interesting to see as they move forward, the real focus on the infrastructure for athlete development. Two very important points, I think, that we heard from Anne is how they analyzed and looked at London, and they use those results and their findings to plan for Rio. Number one, the health and injury prevention heading into Rio, which has been incredibly successful. If you look at the Canadian team, a very healthy squad heading south. And an interesting approach to deepen the talent pool. We know Canada, with a fairly small population base, competes at a very high level on the world stage. But with a shrinking talent pool, it puts even more stress on the sporting system. So to invest and identify ways of developing talent and getting kids interested in staying in sport, well, that's going to bode well, not just for the outcome of high-performance sport, but also for the health of a nation. And third, investing in sports science, technical development, technology development, and a massive focus on coaching. That is one of the strongest things I think they could have done. We'll see how they do as we go to Rio. So when we come back, we're going to visit with one of the athletes who will be representing Canada, Stefan Daniel, 19-year-old para-Olympian who will be competing in triathlon right after this on Crush Performance. Stick around.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. Jeff Kershaw here. Hey, you can reach us, crushperformance.com. Questions, comments, smart remarks, reach out to us there. If you're on Twitter, at Jeff Crush is our handle. And on Facebook, we've started a cool group called The Talent Grid. All you got to do is apply. We'll let you in. And we've got a great group growing there, just sharing information on performance in sports. So if you're on Facebook, it's called The Talent Grid. Check us out and join up. There's some great conversations going on there, and we're coming off of a great conversation with Anne Merklinger, the CEO of Canada's Own the Podium program. If we look at this program, they're pushing sport to new heights. But it's really interesting, you know, with all the distractions going into Rio, how the Canadian team has approached the games, despite the Zika, the security, the potential super bacteria in the water. There's been over 44 test events in Rio to date. Over 17,000 athletes, coaches, and event officials have been there competing leading up to the Olympics. One, to test the facilities and all the infrastructure, the electronics, the scoring, but also to allow athletes to get down there, get acclimatized, and get familiar with the settings, which is a big strategy for many, many teams who are able to get down there. So the concerns that we see in the media, I have to wonder if they're not exaggerated slightly, maybe just slightly. I mean, you can never underestimate the importance of a human health issue like a Zika virus. Listen, I will not judge any athlete that decides not to go to the games because of the Zika virus scare. That's real stuff. I mean, you can look at some of the videos of people who've been affected by this virus and some of the young children and babies who are now suffering the results of this virus. And it's real. It's the real deal. So we're not going to judge for sure, but it's interesting to see that not one Canadian athlete to this point has withdrawn from the games. They have incredible confidence that the athletes are going to be safe and that these games are going to be spectacular in terms of sport. Yet there's going to be 500,000 plus spectators, hopefully, heading to Rio to watch these athletes compete. And you got to wonder what we should be believing in terms of the scare and the media hype, or look internally to what the teams and the safety organizations are saying in terms of what's happening down there. Either way, a great conversation with Anne Merklinger. So moving forward, it's always interesting to get into the mindset of the athletes who will be competing at these incredible games. There's a real special situation going on up in Canada and in Rio itself, as they're about to introduce the triathlon to the Paralympics. So for the first time, we will see Paralympic athletes compete in the triathlon. And Canada has a very, very special contender. His name is Stefan Daniel. We're joined by Stefan now. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, no worries.
Well, the games draw near. It's a very exciting time for any athlete who will be heading to Rio to compete and represent their country. You are a 19-year-old reigning world champion in the sport of triathlon, but with an interesting twist. You will be competing at the first ever Olympic para-triathlon. Congratulations to that.
Thank you very much.
So it's exciting time. You know, if we go back to 2000, we saw Simon Whitfield take the gold when triathlon was introduced as an Olympic sport. So there's some very cool ties here. Do you look back at Simon, or have you ever watched Simon compete and think that maybe that's one day what you would like to do?
Yeah, for sure. Simon's always been a bit of a role model for me, obviously being Canadian and being one of the most successful triathletes ever. I think just having him he's the first ever Olympic medal or gold medalist. I could do the same and to be on the same kind of level with him that way. That'd be pretty cool for me.
Yeah. So let's talk about your road to triathlon. I mean, this is a pretty interesting route for an athlete to take. It's a tough, tough sport. How did you get into this sport?
I started out as a para swimmer when I was 8 years old. I ran through high school. I never really did triathlon fully until about 2013. I did it as a side sport up until then, but when I heard that it would be in Rio for the Paralympic Games, I thought, hey, this is something I could be good at, and I was able to have good success in 2013 and slowly build up, and I was able to win worlds in 2015. So I'm really looking forward to the games. It's going to be another level above all that. There's some stiff competition. There's a lot of guys that can get that gold medal, so I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a good experience.
Yeah, well, in 2015 was an interesting year for you. And, man, you are on fire, mister. You won the 2015 Junior National Able Body Championship. So, I mean, you're not just competing at the para level. You're also competing able body outside the Olympics. So congratulations to that. Now, man, is there a truer test to the challenge of sport?
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, the junior elite and able-bodied side is kind of what motivates me to do triathlon. I love racing against my peers. I've always compared myself against them, not only in racing but in training as well. So having that race last year, I think that was key, really, in having success later on in the year. That gave me just a huge confidence boost, saying, hey, I can compete with the able bodies, and this is a huge confidence boost for Worlds. And I was able to kind of carry that momentum on through. So I'm still doing lots of able-bodied racing. It adds that element of just super stiff competition every time I race, and that's perfect preparation for Paralympic races.
Absolutely. We're talking with Stefan Daniel, Paralympic triathlete for Canada. Well, you know, it's interesting. I was talking with Anne Merklinger, the CEO of the Own the Podium program in Canada recently, and we talked about the impact of sport performance and the success of high-level athletes well beyond sport. And, you know, we look at the para athletes, and you know, you guys are overcoming obstacles that, you know, the normal person just can't relate to. But to see the Paralympic sports and the Canadian team going into Rio, shaping up to be so powerful and so successful, the impact here will go well beyond sport, don't you think?
I think so. I think just what I want to prove is that even if you have a disability, you can still achieve great things if you put your mind to it. I want to kind of see like other kids get not involved in sport necessarily, but just pursuing their dreams. Lots of kids, I think, seem to think that, hey, I have this limiting disability and maybe I can't do the things that other kids could, but it's not true. And I kind of want to help prove that for kids and so they can get involved in whatever their dreams are.
Yeah. So you're young, Stefan. You're competing on the world stage. Let me ask you about your mentality and your daily approach, because I think this is something that's very, very special when we talk about world-class athletes. Just your approach to every day. There's one thing we talk about, you know, in the world of professional sports, my background in professional hockey and football and certainly in Major League Baseball. One thing that I really noticed the top performers do differently than maybe the average person is this relentless pursuit of just a consistent daily approach to getting things done, but working with purpose. I'd like to talk to you a bit about, you know, your approach and how you know, maybe some of the things you've done, maybe deliberately, Stefan, to get to where you are today.
Yeah, I think with a high-level sport. It's not easy. You have to work for it. But I think it's just best to take it one day at a time. I've always kind of thought, well, every day I have a chance to better myself, no matter how I'm feeling or what my mindset is. I think it's just important just to be relentless with that. I think the biggest thing with sport is just try to enjoy yourself as much as you can. If you're not enjoying the sport, then you shouldn't be in it. And really, it's for me, it's easy because I love triathlon and I'm able to train in a beautiful place and do what I love. So I think it's been good that way for sure.
We're talking with Stefan Daniel, a Canadian Olympic athlete. Stefan, it's interesting. You know, we have maybe two approaches to achieving high-level sports. Kids that just dream of it and make it happen, athletes that make it happen, and some that just, you know, go along because they love their sport and it just sort of happens that way. Was there a point where you just realized, hey, you know what, I could be really, really good at this sport? And did that change your attitude to how you went about your training and your competitions?
Yeah, for sure. I've always had fun with the training, but I didn't really think of triathlon as kind of being a serious sport for me until probably around the end of 2013. I was able to go to my first world championships, and I was able to get third there. And I thought, hey, I'm still young. I'm 16 years old, and I have a lot of room to improve here, and I knew that I would be good at this sport, kind of not up really until last year. I think winning that national able-bodied race as a para-athlete was the boost for me. I thought, hey, you know what? I'm doing something pretty special here, and I think I can take this a long way.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Canada has a pretty storied history in the sport of triathlon. I mean, we've got great ambassadors like Simon Whitfield and Paula Finley as well, and many others. It's a tight community, the triathlon community. How much exposure do you have to, you know, the past athletes and the current world champions, and how they influence the way you go about your business?
Sure. I've had the opportunity of meeting both those athletes and lots of the national team athletes. They've been there before and they know what to do like in those pressure scenarios. Simon was kind of somebody I always looked up to because he didn't really ever let pressure get to him. He had a lot of buildup for those races, but he thought, hey, you know what? If I can just put my best foot forward, that's all I can do now. And kind of having that mindset towards big races such as Rio, I think it's going to be a huge factor for me.
Yes. Well, you're a Paralympic athlete. Can you tell our audience about your disability and how, you know, you've learned to adapt or even aspire despite of it?
Yeah, well, it's called radial club hand, so my right forearm is significantly shorter. Basically, it really affects my speed in the water. I can't propel myself as much as a person with two regular arms could. So, yeah, and I never really thought of it as a disability. I kind of thought it was just something that I had to live with. And
awesome.
I always competed with stable-bodied athletes, so I didn't really think of it as a limiting factor, but that's where the main disability is in the swim.
Right. Well, you know, and such a great answer, Stefan. You know what? There's this whole thing in high performance sport, high performance business, high performance music, high performance anything. It's kind of a catchphrase now, but it's this whole concept of mindset and your approach to what you're doing. That is just a fantastic mindset you have. It's no question that you do so well. You know, I have full respect for world-class and professional athletes because of what they're able to do. In order to get there, the dedication it takes and the focus and the concentration on, you know, honing skills over years is really, really impressive to me. I was one of those young athletes that was kind of good at everything, but I never had the mentality to pursue something on and on and on. At the end of baseball season, I was ready for baseball to be over. At the end of hockey, I was ready for hockey to be over. Same with football and so on and so on. It's a very special thing to have continued and extended passion for a sport that you need in order to compete at the world stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whenever you get those kind of mental blocks or anything like that, you kind of just have to sit back and think, why did I start doing this in the first place? And when you're able to realize that, it does help when you think just about your final goal and what it's going to feel like and what it could feel like. So everybody goes through those where they don't want to train anymore, they don't want to race anymore. But those are the most kind of important moments, just to sit back, maybe take a little rest and think, hey, you know what, this is fun and I have a big goal here at the end and I think it's going to be all worth it.
So there was a World Cup ITU championship in my hometown of Edmonton, and we decided to participate one year. I was participating with a bunch of NHL guys I was working with over the summer, and I got dragged into competing the sprint event. with really virtually no training. I mean, we were running, doing all the hockey type stuff, right?
Yeah.
So we go down there, and this is where, you know, I've always had incredible respect for the triathletes and of course the endurance athletes, and to see them compete live is just an absolute treat. But to actually compete in the sport is a whole other ball of wax. Listen, mister, I swim like a tugboat. The water is just so tough for me. The run was okay. The bike was okay. But the water was so tough. To really get good at three different disciplines takes some serious management.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's important, just when you're young, to try to have a background in the sport. Having a swim and run background for sure helps me. But yeah, for sure, it's a lot of training. We train 2 to 3, sometimes 4 times a day. And it's tiring doing swim, bike, run almost every day. But in a way, triathlon's kind of different and fun that way, because you can get up in the morning. Maybe you have a bad swim, but you don't have to do it again. You can go on the track later, and it's always different. And it's a refreshing change doing something different every day. I think the worst it would be being like a swimmer every day, or they're in the water, you know, twice a day every day. But with triathlon, you get to do something different, and it's a total change of focus. So it's good that way. It's tiring, but it's nice that way.
We're talking with Stefan Daniel, Canadian Olympic para-athlete in triathlon. Stefan, you know, it's interesting. If we look at the different disciplines inside of triathlon, is there ever a time that you might just go out and compete in a bike race or a running race, or just go out and compete in a swim meet?
Yeah, I still run cross-country. I run for the University of Calgary Dinos, and I love to run. It's always been my favorite part of the sport. So I definitely do that in the fall. I'll occasionally do some bike races. And I used to do swim meets when I was little, but for right now, I just don't have the time. But for sure, it's important just to kind of do the individual races. It's kind of fun, and it's a bit of a new change. So yeah, I definitely still compete in those and have fun with them.
Yeah, well, we all know what it takes just to compete in a sport, period, even if it's just for fun. But to get to the world-class level of any sport is incredibly special, and you need massive amounts of support from all different directions. Who are some of the people that have really influenced you or helped you along the way?
I think the biggest kind of inspiration for me was Brian McKeever. Seeing how he took his sport to a high level as a para-athlete and was able to actually qualify for the Olympics was a pretty big inspiration for me. With having a disability, everything's much harder, but it can still be achieved. And getting to a high level in sport was a challenge for me. I didn't always think I'd be able to get there, but having that inspiration was a huge factor.
Yeah. How about your support team now? We know that every athlete, nobody competes alone, even for the individual athletes. I mean, you've got coaches, you've got your parents, you've got family, you've got your massage therapist, strength coaches. There's so many experts around you, and those good people really can help propel an athlete to a new level of competition.
Yeah, for sure. I have a ton of people that help me. I have multiple coaches. I have a ton of training partners, family, friends, sports psychologists, strength. I wish they could all be at the podium all up with me whenever I'm there. This definitely isn't just me doing this. Without all of them and the support that they all bring in different ways, it'd be impossible to be where I am today. So, yeah, I owe everything to them because they've helped me huge.
Yeah, well, we know when you're out competing, you're representing that entire team. Let me ask you this. Your approach heading into Rio now, it's right around the corner. I think we're 20 days out. This is going to be an interesting games. I mean, there's lots of distractions as we head in. We all know about the Zika virus and all the issues with the security. But the Olympic Games have been through this sort of thing before. The sport will go on. To stay focused and on task heading into Rio, what's your plan of attack?
I think it's just, I try not to read too much into those type of things. I know that Rio is going to put on a great Olympics. Once the Olympics starts, I think it's all going to be forgotten about and everyone's just going to have fun and do their best at the Olympics. So I'm trying just not to focus on that. I know Rio is going to be a fantastic experience and one of the best of my life. So I'm just going to try to train and focus for that. And it's going to be a pretty special time.
Do you have any test matches coming up before the games, or are you totally focused on competing at Rio right now?
Yeah, Rio's been in the back of my mind for a while. But before that, I still have junior nationals again next weekend and a couple other races that'll be important to me. And then in August, I get this preparation for Rio. So right now, I'm just trying to focus on those races. I don't want to be thinking about Rio too much, but come August, so let's put a big training block in and get ready for it.
Fantastic, Stefan. Well, listen, we appreciate your time today. Good luck. We'll be watching with great interest, my man. So all the best to you, and we'll look forward to talking again soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
There you go. Fantastic conversation with one of the athletes who will be performing down in Rio. An interesting story as, of course, the Paralympic triathlon will be introduced in Rio. Simon Whitfield, back in 2000, Canadian triathlete, won gold. Could a Canadian capture gold again in Rio? It'll be a great story to follow. Well, that's the show for today. We have to thank Ann Merklinger, the CEO of Own the Podium, for joining us, and of course, Stefan for coming on. Next week on the show, more Rio Olympics as we look at some of the cutting-edge technology that will be used by the athletes to push performance to new bounds. And we're also going to take a good, hard look at the situation of drugs in sport and doping as we talk to WADA about where we're at in the war on drugs as we head into Rio and what we can expect to see post-Rio in terms of the blood passport, new technologies, and maybe some new rulings coming down on the stage of the World Anti-Doping Association. So more Rio next week on Crush Performance. We'll talk to you then.
When you are looking for everything going on in MMA, you want to come to the MMA Insiders Podcast as myself, Jason Floyd, and Sam Capel give you insight you cannot get anywhere else.
I've done it all in this sport, a matchmaker, promoter, even an amateur fighter. If you're looking for the inside scoop, an inside perspective you can't get anywhere else, MMA Insiders Podcast is your destination.
Check out the MMA Insiders Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.